Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, it's Mark.
Yo.
And it's Ian. Yo. And we're going to do a little something different. Actually, it's not different at all. It just feels different because I don't think we've done something like this in a while.
Yeah, we haven't done Monster in a while.
Monster, weird, obscure 80s, but not 80s, because it's actually 1992, which we were both surprises both of us. I remember seeing trailers for this movie and thinking, oh, I'd check that out. That looks like right up my alley. When I was going through that horror slash sci-fi phase that you always go through when you're in that age of, you know, like 10, 11, 12, 13, just starting to hit puberty, just starting to try and figure out like what kind of crazy, you know, like that kind of crazy stuff has a certain appeal. And, yeah, I remember seeing the trailers for it and thinking, oh, this looks awesome, and then eventually renting it and watching it, which,
you know. I, on the other hand, am kind of surprised that I have no recollection of this movie whatsoever.
It surprises me, too, and I don't know, I mean, we'll get into the review in a minute, and I don't know if I should feel good about introducing it to you or if I should feel bad, because honestly, I had not seen this movie since I rented it when I was a kid. The film is Split Second by two sort of unremarkable British directors, I guess. 1992 with Rutger Hauer. Anyone that would even vaguely recall it would recall the poster probably more than anything. It's Rutger Hauer all decked out in the like black leather gear with the trench coat and the giant gun slung over his shoulder, walking like a samurai, like a future samurai or something, and there's this giant like alien-esque kind of like monster clawed creature behind him, kind of giving pursuit, if you will. So yeah, I just, in the back of my head, have always sort of vaguely remembered this movie, but not in any real sense. Like, it's essentially like watching it new, because it's been 17 years since I've seen it, pretty much.
The monster reminds me of a cross between Pumpkinhead and Alien.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely got that original Stan Winston Pumpkinhead feel to it, though there's hardly any monster. They do try to do the Alien thing. It's clear that these guys were fans of Alien, of Blade Runner,
Stan Winston.
Of all that stuff, and it's also clear that they did not have maybe all that much money. It's a pretty, like,
they had shit for writing.
Low-budget movie. Yeah.
But it was funny.
That's just the thing, see? I don't know. It seems to me like they're having a lot of fun in this movie, and I give that a greater pass. It doesn't take itself super seriously.
No, it doesn't.
And so...
They don't know what they're trying to do with the movie.
That's
because
part of it,
yeah. Does get serious, and then it's got the love story, which is completely pointless. And though I was wrong, I was thinking that Kim Cattrall hadn't had a nude scene until her Sex in the City shit, but I was wrong.
Yeah, you were wrong.
So that was my big revelation for the night.
No, yeah, it does kind of do the genre blending. It's not a perfect film in that sense. I mean, that's why it gets 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
It's a strange buddy cop movie.
Yeah, it's got that buddy cop element. It's got that sort of dingy post-apocalyptic, not really post-apocalyptic, it's set in 2008, the far-flung future. So, apparently global warming in 2008 had caused such, you know, increases in tide because of melting polar ice caps, and then there was all this rain that London, which is where it's set, has had a degree of flooding. There's basically just, I would say,
there's a foot of water on the ground.
A foot of water on the ground anywhere, everywhere people are walking. So it's a... things like that, I think it's successful in those things. It definitely creates a world. It is unique. It's not like New York. It's being set in London alone kind of differentiates it, I think, to a degree. It makes it sort of, especially as a kid, I remember almost, it was harder for me to like connect with it because it was foreign, you know? Like, now that doesn't really mean anything, but...
It's a global...
Yeah, it's a global village now.
Global village.
Uh-huh. But... So, I mean, I think that, yeah, the idea of the world And just, it's still back in the heyday with the practical special effects and with, you know, people building sets and sort of having to bounce light off of real objects, which is just a huge obsession of mine in terms of movies, especially science fiction and spectacle movies where there's actual stuff. So they had to build these sets. They had to find these places and they had to dress them to look, to fit this world. And they found some good locations and they made some good places. And it's a consistent world. I mean, it's lacking in terms of something a little more complex for, you know, there's not like a scene where they're at like a really fancy dinner talking to the mayor or something like that that would kind of give you some sense, oh, this is supposed to be the future and there's actually some futuristic stuff. Instead, it's really in the dirt and in the grime and, you know, in the muck. Like you said, there's no cell phones. Yeah, it's all with the rats and stuff. So, I mean, it's definitely like a pale Blade Runner alien wannabe, to be sure. And the character is sort of an amalgamation of a Clint Eastwood and 17 other types of sort of... And like Mel Gibson or something, yeah.
He's got the crazy going. Crazy. But with the panic attacks mm-hmm. and all that shit and the sugar and the coffee and...
No sleep and the chocolate.
And the smoking and...
And the Rutger Hauerness, the Hauerness of it all. Rutger Hauerness. But that's kind of cool, though, because it's
I don't think he really knew what to do with the role. I didn't feel that... He became the character at all. I think that probably on, and I don't blame Rutger Hauer at all.
No, this is the director. This director hasn't done very much. The director,
I don't think, knew what to do with the character. And so, yeah, it just
was... They were maybe trying to experiment a little too much with the tone and with the character. You're right, because they bring in the other character. And there's some great funny moments. I'd say that third act really kind of becomes pretty good. And kind of funny in the way that they're both on board in the same direction. But there's a lot more humor at that point. It becomes more of a buddy cop movie. And that doesn't gel so well with the beginning where the character is all very hard-boiled and grizzled. And then, you know, he's obviously dealing with this post-traumatic stress of essentially being assaulted by this creature and not having a full memory of it, but being obsessively going after that. So I don't know... It's like there's pieces and elements here that work in some cases, but the way they try to blend them and make them and put them together, they're just not successful. And that's nothing new. Most of this genre blending stuff, most of this tone blending stuff is really hard to get right. I mean, it's another reason why something like Cowboy Bebop is so beloved, because it's done in that. They're able to be funny and they're able to be really melodramatic and still make it work when they want to make it work for whatever situation. And that's, I mean, that's, it's a tough thing. It takes a lot, but, yeah, Split Second is, I would say, the kind of movie where if you like, you know, the monstery / sci-fi strange, hard boiled neo-noir stuff, then this is something you ought to see at least once. It's its own different kind of thing. They don't really get into... It doesn't do a lot of things that I couldn't remember if it would do this or not, to give explanation to the origin of the creature. It's not like there's an evil corporation that runs... Yeah, they play on all... They mention all of that stuff, but at the same time, it's kind of... They never get too into that either. So it's all just kind of like shit happens, which is cool.
You know what else was strange were the solid British actors?
Yeah.
The guy that was Foster's best friend.
Robert Postlewaite, yeah.
That was kind of surprising. The guy
whatever his name is.
Played the chief.
Yeah, the chief is good.
He's good. And I've seen him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I know he was in Patriot Games, but I've seen him in some other stuff.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a British production. It's got that sort of... So it's got that kind of low budget. I don't know. I seriously doubt, like, the BBC-funded part of this or anything. It was a Sony Pictures release, or at least home video release, so they might have eventually purchased it for home video. Bought it up
so they could make 4 copies.
So they could make 4 copies and put it out and then sell it to HBO, where you would never happen to see it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really... I just can't believe I never saw it.
Yeah, but it definitely fits in that realm of those...
But there were so many of those movies.
The sci-fi movies that came out in the late 80s and early 90s.
It's pushing the edge of that
period. It definitely is. I would say that like by 94, that doesn't really happen. That didn't really happen too much anymore. I mean, Total Recall is in 90. Something like RoboCop is in the mid-80s.
87
or something. So, and something like Leviathan is in the 80s.
Or, you know, just, again, the same kind of crap. Like, I Come in Peace.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, that's right. I Come in Peace. It's very much so like I Come in Peace, now that I think about it. It's on the same level as that, except I think it's better than I Come in Peace because I think the setting, to me, is more interesting. It's more interesting to watch this movie. Yeah. And the whole creature thing is almost kind of a forethought.
There were just so many of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, crap, it's just...
I can't believe you mentioned I Come in Peace. That's crazy.
It just popped in my head. Class of 1999, except for that was like in Seattle.
Those were like cyborg whatever, yeah.
Right. And, I mean, there were just so many of those movies. And, you know, sort of as a teaser, gotta do... Runaway.
Yeah. Gotta do it. We'll definitely be doing Runaway at some point. We gotta find the metal spiders.
You know, when we're talking about the Encore channel and movies that popped up that I hadn't thought about in, you know, 20 years. And there were just so many of those movies. I remember movies of the future where people were living underground.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's Cherry 2000 or 9000 or whatever.
Cherry 2000. I remember that was on HBO, like, you know, it was in the rotation.
Uh-huh.
That was an awesome movie. I saw that on the Encore channel, and I had always thought that it was Don Johnson.
It's not. It's the other guy that's Don Johnson, like, from Miami Vice or something, I think.
I think he was on some TV show or something. Yeah. But, yeah, there's just so many of those sci-fi... Basically, Mad Max ripoffs.
Some of them were Mad Max ripoffs, but that's another thing. We have the Mad Max movies kind of... I mean, the first one's in the 70s, and the second one is probably more mid-80s. But, like, by Thunderdome, I mean, really, it's just this huge collection of, I think obviously a lot of it has to do with Cold War fear. Yeah, but it's just, they were throwing gobs of money in the 80s, and they were making... you know, some good fantasy and sci-fi stuff.
I think it's way too easy for people to create crappy special effects.
Oh yeah, with computers, and that's the Sci-Fi Channel original movie. They've got a new one of those every week.
Was I watching that movie with the Native American spirit that was turning people into dust?
Bone Eater, yeah. Sci-Fi Channel original movie, Bone Eater. Were you watching
that? I can't remember.
Seth and I were watching it. Yeah, I think we might have been.
That's so horrible.
With Storm Cloud and Storm Cloud. Running Bear or whatever.
Running Bear.
Ten
Bears.
Played by Bruce Boxleitner. No, I feel like it's really too bad that the sci-fi movies have gotten to the point where they've gotten, because... if they made 12 a year instead of 52, which it seems like, not that they're making them. I know how this works. People go out, they make a crappy movie, they try to sell it to Sci-Fi, and Sci-Fi buys it, it distributes it, it puts its name on it, it owns it, and that's that. But, and you're right, it's the crappy visual effects are easier to do. I mean, kids with just, you know, a decent computer and After Effects can do the work.
You know, and going back to, you know, crap like Blair Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Just the really, really simple ideas that play on your imagination.
Yeah.
The first time, and, you know, I'd heard all the crap, and I think we talked about it before, but first time I saw it, and, you know, the end notwithstanding, I was, what was it, like $20,000, $30,000 or something like that?
It was not a lot of money.
Not real professional. And yet, that movie played on my imagination and the idea of me being lost in the woods. And just that, without, you know, some supernatural shit, without wolves or anything else, that's a scary thought in general.
No, it is.
And it, you know, required no special effects.
Nope.
That's the thing that irritates me the most about...
Well, none of these sci-fi movies are scary. I mean, I honestly believe that they are 99.99% made for the, quote, ironic enjoyment factor. People wanting to see bad, corny, campy, Because the visual effects never pass. They're never convincing. They take you right out of anything that's there, if you were ever in it in the first place, and you usually aren't. I mean, we talked about it when we talked about Jaws. It's the basic Jaws plot for any one of these sci-fi movies. It's some sheriff, either he's new in town or whatever. Usually you throw in some stepdaughter or some daughter that he gets to have half the year and then divorce. I mean, not that that's part of Jaws, but just like, you know, I mean, obviously they throw other things in there and it just turns into, you know, and then it's just a monster movie. But like what you say with something like Jaws, what makes it good is that it's well crafted and it's solid storytelling and it plays on legitimate fears. And they had a terrible fake shark, but they hardly ever used it because that would take you out of the movie.
You know, the beauty of using a shark is they were able to splice in real shark
footage,
and that, you know,
I mean, the real bone eater footage was unfortunately lost in that fire, and so, you know, they can only work with what they've got.
You know, I've often wondered if I ever saw something supernatural, how I would react.
Yeah.
Would you just disbelieve? Would you go crazy? Would you join a cult? Would you get religion?
It depends on what
drink lots of coffee and smoke. It would
depend
constantly.
Depend on the nature of it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there are definitely different levels. I mean, something where there are things where it could be and it might not be, like the whole UFO sighting crap. But you know, if like a bone eater basically just dropped down in front of you and started tearing through the crowd and body parts were hitting you,
then you'd react just like anything. If it's like a wild animal going crazy, you'd try to save yourself. That's common sense. I don't think that would have anything. See, that's what the great problem is with a lot of these monster movies is they forget the real fundamental human instinct, fight or flight, and all that.
The propaganda in that. Did you watch? Probably not. Inglourious Bastards, and they had on the special features.
I didn't. The full length propaganda. I've heard about it. I haven't seen the special features.
And of course, they have the American grabbing this baby Italian baby
using it as a shield. Eli Roth apparently directed that. He did the whole propaganda film. That's terrible. Oh my gosh.
It was pretty terrible.
Yeah. No, but terrible in a good way.
Terrible in a good way, absolutely.
Yes. But
it was different.
We'll get back to 60 seconds, I guess, or 60.
Split second.
I mean, just kind of wrapping it up. It's you got to see it at least once.
You know,
it's so different.
I would
weird.
Never tell anybody to spend $90 to see this.
No. I say you got
go dig out the VCR and, you know, find a $5 copy on VHS.
You can find
it. Doesn't fucking matter.
At a flea market, you'll find this for $1.99, probably like
The Jane Fonda workout tapes.
Yeah, with the Jane Fonda workout tape as like a dust cover for it, and somebody maybe like used a crayon to write Split Second over Jane Fonda's ass. And then, yeah, that would be the way to get it, or just the internet. The internet is replete. Just go to the internet and find it. Check it out. It's worth checking out just once. I don't even know.
Yeah, but you know the kind of movies you enjoy, dear audience, and I mean, you'll know if this is something that, floats your boat.
I'm not saying it's going to be something you're going to love, because it's not. It's not a good movie. I mean,
it really isn't a good movie.
By star rating, depending on my mood, I could
give it 1.5.
I could give it 1.5, I think. You're right. I think because the uniqueness of the setting.
I was wasted, I'd probably give it a 2, 2.5.
Oh, yeah. If you're hammered, like, you know, on a rainy Saturday night.
The movie made me laugh.
And whatever. It does feel a little long. We do have that as a criticism, too.
I don't know how long it was. It just felt long.
It drags in the second act, which is a problem that all sorts of movies have. The consistency of the environment and of the world they've created.
It's probably your only chance to ever see a fully automatic shotgun.
Yeah, the fully automatic shotgun is kind of cool.
And if you were, like I said, if you were a Sex and the City fan, you know, you get to see some of the early years.
Yeah, see how things develop.
Defining the craft.
Mm-hmm. And it's like probably one of the only movies other than Blind Fury where Rutger Hauer is not a bad guy.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that. Well, he was a good guy in Lady Hawk.
That's true. Lady Hawk and Blind Fury and Split Second.
I'm sure there's more, but
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know that. Was he a good guy in that Verhoeven movie? Do you remember about that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think he was a bad guy. I just saw parts.
Yeah, I think he's maybe sort of an anti-hero type. I've never seen it, but it's Zach's. Zach likes it. I should check it out. The pigeon thing. I gotta at least mention the pigeon thing. The whole Roy Batty pigeon thing from Blade Runner. It might have been a dove in Blade Runner. I know that's a huge faux pas for me as a internet nerd not to remember the specific bird that Roy Batty had when he talked about, seeing ships blow up in space. But there's all these pigeons hanging out when he first gets to his apartment, his place, which I was kind of disappointed in. I talk about like the set dressing and the world being cool and everything, but his apartment was just kind of I don't know. Maybe it was very realistic in the sense that it was just like a collection of crap kind of thrown together. It didn't, and the blue walls and stuff. It didn't have a coolness to it that I was hoping it would maybe have, even if it was messy, It lacked that. And then the motorcycle was a huge tease. I thought they were going to use that Harley at some point in the movie,
With the automatic shotguns
yeah,
running
they would
around.
be like riding the automatic shot, riding the Harley through like the like flooded tunnels with automatic shotguns in tow. That would have been awesome.
Despite governating our poor, sad
California.
California, as just nobody did it cooler than Arnie on the Harley
Oh,
in
yeah.
T2.
Anyway, yeah. Split second, check it out or don't check it out. Go to iTunes and look up our podcast, please, if you're listening to this, if you haven't already, and give us a rating, out of 5 stars, give us something you think is fair, and write us a little review so we kind of know what's going on. Shoot us an email if you want.
And don't judge us on Split Second because, we really didn't have a whole lot to work with here.
Well, fuck judge us on Split Second. We're giving good criticism that's based on elements of the movie, and we're telling you outright this isn't the best movie in the world, but there's things that are interesting to it and valuable to it. Well, valuable to it. There's things you may want to check out about it or may not
Is it in the Smithsonian?
if you're going for that
Or
interest.
Library of Congress,
Library
I
of
mean?
Congress. Oh boy, laser disc or something maybe. I wonder if it was had a laser disc release. That'd be so. I'll bet it
He
did.
must have.
So yeah, check us futilepodcast@gmail.com is our email, and graniteseed.com/futilepodcast, or just Google futile podcast and we'll be up there somewhere. I think we're first if you Google futile podcast as one or two words. Probably just do it as one and see what happens. It might be some Australian YouTube clip of some kid who apparently has the same name as us. But we've been around for years at this point.
It has been years.
It has been years. So this is the 200 and somethingth episode. So yeah, Split Second. Chickity check it if you can find it and relive
Need
some
to
of
start
your
working on those
childhood.
syndication dogs.
Watching it, and I just kind of gave. She's like, "Oh, this is fine. I'll just watch it from here. I don't care, whatever." And so then I just went upstairs and I was reading a book or doing whatever, and I thought about it and I thought, "Huh." And I'm like, new technology like old technology. Remember how records are something you needed to flip? And I ejected it and I flipped it over and put it, and then it did. So that was kind of,